Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Friday. It's finally Friday here on the program. Coming up here shortly, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, one of our Friday regulars. Also on the program, State Senator Chris Elliott in the 10 o'clock hour. And we'll wrap it all up. We got to cut out of here a half hour early for Arbor Tiger basketball. But we'll get my friend Hunter Johnson from Tide 100.9 in Tuscaloosa and talk some sports ball. Sorry, the stick to the issues crowd. It's just felt appropriate today to deviate from the usual plan. So that's coming up on the program. As always, you want to be in touch with me, your show host? Text line 251-343-0106. So all you got to do is shoot me a text and we'll respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. I think the big news is the cave from Schumer. People have been telling me that this was going to happen. Well, a couple of people, one of us, which we talked to earlier in the week from Breitbart, my colleague Bradley Jay, but there was no way the Democrats were going to let a shutdown happen and risk being blamed. It was a damned if they do, darned if they don't, or whatever. So Schumer comes out and says he's voted for it on MSNBC last night. And if you heard the stories about Kirsten Gillibrand, his new fellow New Yorker, she was angry that they weren't going to go into full shutdown mode. This is kind of, I talked about this a lot over the last couple of years and kind of waiting for this moment to happen. But I think you're seeing some real fractures in the Democratic Party. I mean, they are very, very disciplined, and they stick together. They tend to, like, keep their dirty laundry behind closed doors. But I'm trying to anticipate here, like, what have we been waiting for here? And how can this hold together for so long? And not have had like an internal dust up like the Republicans seem to be having on a perpetual chronic basis. Watching CNN right now. Sorry, it distracted. So they're showing highlights from a Asheville, North Carolina town hall. Congressman Chuck Edwards, I guess, is now in that seat, old Heath Shuler seat, Mark Meadows. And listen to me. If you're out there and you're a member of Congress and you're listening to this on podcast or you're a staffer and you like to tune into this show, don't let your member do these town halls because it's nothing but orchestrated outrage. And the moment you do a town hall and the CNN camera shows up, you're going to be on CNN and they're just using you. They're just using you as propaganda to create a perception that the country is just irate with Trump. Especially in that district. Asheville is a blue dot in a red district. Well, it's a little bit bigger than a blue dot, but that is a wildly hippie, grungy place, Asheville, North Carolina. And CNN sent their cameras up there, and all it is, it's trying to get pictures of, like, angry people angry left-wingers to try to convince, at least just convincing the five people watching CNN, present company included, that there's trouble for Trump. There's choppy waters ahead. People don't like this. And it's nothing but a manufactured astroturfed situation. Now, I don't know that. I don't think that they're paying protesters to go to this. I'm not going to go that far, but it's organized. And all you got to do in a congressional district of 600,000 people is find 40 or 50 left-wing kooks and pack the room. It's not hard. You don't even have to be from that district. You can just import them from outside the district. Because most people who are like generally happy with what's going on in the country at the federal level aren't going to a town hall to express their gripes. Anyway, back to the CR, expect a cloture vote around 2 is what I'm told. It could go a little late. We could be even have a short shutdown. But what I'm being told is these guys want to get back home to their districts and they don't want to hang out in Washington, D.C. any longer than they have to. So Schumer's going to vote for cloture. They'll vote. It's the 2 cute by half. They're going to vote for cloture, but they're not going to vote for the bill, but it'll pass. So the government's not going to shut down. I think a lot of the base probably wanted to see it shut down. And it's a breakthrough. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. Also, tariffs. We think the market is pricing in a little bit of risk here because it's not just the tariffs, but the Fed signaling, unless the labor market goes down, the Fed's not going to come in and cut rates. And it doesn't appear that Trump's going to throw a lifeline to the markets, which if you're watching this, it was kind of funny because 3 weeks ago we were told all Trump cared about were his billionaire buddies. And now all he cares about is, well, I don't know what he cares about, but he's sinking the stock market, which you would think his billionaire buddies would be the ones who felt the brunt of that. What's it going to be? He's either helping his billionaire buddies or he's taking the stock market. See, all the contradictions and conflicting messages here about Trump critics. But that's something you hear from the Beltway media. But I feel like I'm just kind of batting down everything the mainstream media have been saying. A few things here at the state level. State Education Superintendent Eric Mackey. You're going to love this, guys. Just out of nowhere. There's a proposal, I guess they're going to hold it over till next month, that would raise Mackey's salary 55%. His salary under this proposal would increase by $135,000 a year. It would go from right now he's making $245,000 a year to $380,000. And that sounds like a lot. It is a lot. But the deal is there's two superintendents, Mobile County Public Schools. Threadgill makes $365K a year, and Eddie Tyler here in Baldwin County makes $315,000 a year. So what my understanding was, as far as his salary goes, he wanted to be the highest earning superintendent than the superintendents of some local schools. But whatever, do you think he's earned a 55% raise? And so there's eight members of the state school board, and there's four conservatives and kind of four and three left-leaning Democrat-ish kind of types. And then there's Kay Ivey. Or there's, yeah, seven. Each congressional district that he throw into governor gives you eight. So the states, it just seems like I know times are different now with the value of the dollar, but wow, going up $135,000 raise for a public employee seems a little much. Also 1819news.com. We had this story here. There's a protest in Mobile, yes, over the weekend, and it was a pseudo Black Lives Matter protest. They're protesting Donald Trump and Elon Musk. What a novel idea. Not much of that going on now, is there? So some of the attendees were chanting "All Lives Matter" instead of "Black Lives Matter," and one of the organizing groups put a message out on Facebook saying, "Hey, if you say All Lives Matter, we're going to ask you not to participate in our protest." Because All Lives Matter is offensive. And then finally, I kind of stumbled on this, and before we get to the break here, Pike Road newish school system outside of Montgomery, one of these DEI kind of art project kind of initiatives. Meant to make us really think hard about civil rights. Well, apparently one of these, was a young artist. It's a junior high school where they're making them draw, or they're doing art. I don't know how many were participating. But one of these artists in training drew a picture of five hooded Ku Klux Klan members for this art project, which is, you know, this happened. Regrettably, it's part of Alabama's history. And I guess the school system posted a bunch of this art on social media, and somebody said, "Hey, why is the school system, why is the Pike Road school system posting pictures of hooded KKK members? What's going on here?" And they relented, deleted it, and apologized for such a depiction. I have questions about the whole idea of this project to start with, but seems a little touchy. Anyway, we can talk about that more. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Heat the girl so far away.
Then he cried just south of Nashville, and he turned that car around.
He said, "This is where you get off, boy, because I'm going back to Alabama." As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, "Mister, many thanks." He said, "You don't have to call me Mister, Mister. The whole world called me Hank." He said, "Victor, can you make..."
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking with us on this Friday morning. 251 343-0106. Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, up in the next segment. I believe Todd's got Governor Ivey on his show this evening. I asked this question to some of my friends in the know. If Kay Ivey sees her shadow on the Senate Capitol Journal, does that mean there's only six more weeks until signing I of the legislative session? 251-343-0106. What do we got here? Mr. Plot. Sorry, Jeff. Haven't been watching TV. What about the 10 votes? Let's see. With regard to the CR, what about the 10 that voted for the Cane Man censure? Oh, well, so, Mr. Plot, the CR is already passed in the House, and it's now the House has gone home. They've adjourned. They're on their recess, and it has to be approved by the Senate, which is kind of smart on the House's part. If you heard Barry Moore yesterday talk about this, they gaveled out, and the forces the Senate to take it or leave it with what the House has done, because they're not going to like pass their own budget and then force all 435 House members to fly back to DC and vote on something else. A name texture. There's no contradictions or conflicting messages about Trump. The common denominator is they are going to throw anything and everything at him to find out what sticks. But as of late, Trump is Teflon and nothing sticks. No, there are contradicting messages in the media. I'm sorry. You're wrong, okay? And they tell us one day that all Trump cares about is billionaires, and then a few days later, they tell us that Trump just wants to take the stock market. Then that is a contradiction, okay? I'm sorry. That's what is a contradiction. Go look it up in the dictionary. Don't question me on this stuff. Leave it to me. I'll guide you home. I'm not going to do you wrong, at least not intentionally. Michael, the new Trump line is he's just trying to help his billionaire buddies who are shorting the market. Also, is anyone able to get into Ainsworth here and talk to him about being the next senator? It would be awesome to have him in the Senate for the next 18 to 24 years. He just sounds like he doesn't want to do it. But, look, here's a theory, and I don't know. I mean, I talk to Ainsworth every now and then, but and I don't know that this is part of his calculus. But this could be what he's doing. And I got to talk more about that in just a moment, too. If Ainsworth shows any reluctance about running for governor against Tuberville, it's just going to make Tuberville more emboldened to pull the trigger here and run for governor. Ainsworth wants to be governor more than he wants to be senator. So at this stage, and it's very, very early, Mike, he's got, I think Ainsworth's doing what he needs to do if he wants to be governor. And Sam Gavan, he is a state senator from North Alabama. He was on with Dale Jackson yesterday morning. He said, look, what if this happens? And this is what we really need to think about. And I don't know the answer to this question. What if Tuberville runs and he clears the field, clears the deck? No one else is going to run against him because they don't think that they can beat him. And then a court decides that he doesn't have the eligibility to be governor. The rules for being governor and senator are different. You can live in the state one day and run for Senate. As governor, you have to have been here for 7 years. And that's something that could be challenged, I would think, potentially. And then what if we get past qualifying? Tuberville is ruled ineligible to run, and you wind up with Dean Odle or something. What happens then? It's got to be really vigilant here, I think, about where this heads. But it's very early. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Jackson.
You come again.
106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with me, your show host. All you got to do is text me. I believe we got him on the line. Joining us now, our good friend Cap from Capital Journal. You can watch that tonight. But usually, since it's third session, once session resumes next week, it's on a nightly basis. But also, he is the publisher of Alabama Daily News. Todd Stacey is with us. Todd, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Hey, how's your week off been?
Not hardly. I mean, it's been a little slower with the legislature out. We get to catch up on a few things. But we do have a Capital Journal episode tonight, as you mentioned. And so it has left, you know, us reporters and everybody that follows the legislature a little time to catch up on other business and everything. So no complaints here, but they'll be back next week, and I'm sure they'll be ready to go.
Before we get into the excitement of politics, how you feel about the game here in a little while?
I mean, good. Obviously, Auburn ended its season in a disappointing way with two losses, but sometimes wake-up calls are needed. And so, you know, I would like to see them notch at least a couple of tournament wins before the big dance. But I feel pretty good about the seeding, and I'm really more worried about health of the players and kind of their psychological state going into the tournament. You just never know. Last year was obviously pretty disappointing. You're getting bounced in the first round, so hopefully we're ready to go. It sounds like they are.
Yeah, it felt like maybe making that run into conference tournament, and then there was a letdown after that. But one thing you can say about that hopefully they learned from that experience. We'll get right into it. Am I correct to assume you have Governor Ivey tonight on your program?
That's right. We've got the governor, we've got Attorney General Marshall, and we've got Ag Commissioner Rick Pate. So a really good lineup in terms of timeliness. They all have really, you know, interesting things going on. And so I was really appreciating them making time this week.
Yeah, because this is a good time for that. So the session, I don't know. I was kind of detecting a little fatigue there toward the end of last week. It's finally starting to wear on people. But it sounds like next week, this one kind of middle week before they take another week off, is expected to be a slow week. I think they got some sunset, maybe some other things, but if there are fireworks to be seen, it won't be until that like third week from now, right?
Yeah. So it's the House's turn to do sunset. And so I think, yeah, you can expect that. That's just basically a pro forma, you know, kind of normal business they got to do. It's not sexy, but they got to do it every year. What we're waiting for to see, if there is going to be fireworks, it would be over the House Bill 202. That's the police immunity bill. Democrats have a real problem with that. They don't want to, they think it goes too far in terms of offering protections to police officers, you know, whether that's on the criminal side or on the civil side. You know, basically, cop gets involved in a shooting, you know, uses their weapon, and then it gets sued or possibly prosecuted. This bill offers, you know, a couple of steps of protections for that. Doesn't, you know, give cops immunity from all, you know, officer-involved shootings or anything like that, but it gives them an extra layer of protection. The whole point is to make it easier to recruit and retain police officers, because we do have a shortage in most cities. The Democrats have a problem with it. Whenever it goes to the Senate, past the House, whenever it goes to the Senate, it's going to be a big, you know, debate on the floor. And so, they may not want to tackle that next week. They may just want to maybe get it through committee and wait until the second half of the session. But that's the one thing that everybody's waiting on, is it's going to be a kind of a time bomb waiting to happen.
Yeah, I would expect that one would be go along to get along there at all. I guess a lot of the interest, Todd, and you're aware. The Tuberville for governor discussion's really, really red hot right now, and he was all with the morning guys earlier, but he's not shying away from the discussion. He's not very committal, but he's keeping the door open. And I don't know, like, what do you think the calculation is there?
Yeah, it's really fascinating, and this came from, you know, think about what, 3 or 4 months ago, we would talk about this because it was just kind of this rumor, and I'd write about it a little bit on Inside Alabama Politics. I'm sure you wrote about it some too, but it was all just kind of speculative and all this. Well, now, you know, people are talking about it on the record, right? He's been asked on the record. He's been, you know, asked on television and things like that. It starts to get kind of real. Plus there's the fact that 2026 is right around the corner. You know, you could start raising money in May, late May when the session ends. So it's time to start running for governor. So I don't know. As I wrote this week, I'm still kind of skeptical that this would actually be a thing. It doesn't all line up in my head, just in terms of, you know, what's going on in Washington. Tuberville spent 4 years in the minority in the Senate, which can be a bummer, and alongside President Joe Biden, who he obviously despised. Well, now he's in the majority in the Senate, which is a lot more fun, and he's got the president that he always wanted to be there to support in Donald Trump. So, like, why would you give that up? You know, you finally got what you wanted.
Well, I mean, Todd, to be fair, you know, I mean, after the 26th cycle, we don't know that. I mean, Trump will obviously still be president, but I don't know the Senate map looks like it could be good for Republicans. That's a big wild card right there. But I mean, it could be just like, you could be a U.S. senator for those next 2 years and do nothing but fend off like impeachments from the House potentially.
That's true. That's a very good point. A lot of that will depend on what happens for the next 18 months. But anyway, so I'm not 100% convinced. I could see him doing it, and that would be super interesting. Obviously, for folks like us in the media, that would just be a lot of fun to cover, not just him running, but actually him being governor if he would win. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I've talked to him about it a couple of times, and he, you know, seems like you said, keeping the door open, and that's fine. What's really interesting is the dynamic between him and Ainsworth, right? Him and Will Ainsworth, who is running, and I don't think really could be talked out of that. And so they're friends. They have been friendly for years. Ainsworth was a early and big supporter of Tuberville when he got into that Senate primary. So, I mean, just imagine those two running against each other. That would be a real heck of a race. And again, a lot of fun for folks like us to cover.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just, it's hard for me to see anybody laying a glove on Tuberville, though. I mean, he took a shots from, like, I would argue the most popular Republican, now tainted by his time in the Trump administration, perhaps, with Jeff Sessions. And, you know, Bradley Byrd's no slouch. I mean, you look at it, he would have to be a favorite against anybody else, including Governor Ainsworth.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question that he would be the front runner. And that part of that just comes from name recognition, right? He's got pretty much universal name recognition. And if you look at his time in the Senate, like, you know, he's made Democrats mad. He's made some moderates mad, but base Republicans, he's not done anything except please them and build support amongst Republicans. And so I think he'd absolutely be the front runner. Now, look, I will say running for governor is different than running for Senate. They're very, very different jobs. I think voters expect different things from a governor versus a U.S. senator. And so I think he'd have work to do in terms of explaining why, you know, why you wanted to be governor and what you bring to the table. And I think Ainsworth has a really good argument, right? I mean, he's been waiting in the wings for what will be 8 years now. And, you know, he's been preparing for this for a long time. So I think he might have some good arguments, but he's got to, Ainsworth has some work to do in building that name recognition, right? I mean, just being lieutenant governor doesn't matter all that much. You've got to go out and basically buy it, right, with television and radio advertisements. So he has that would be an uphill battle for Ainsworth, but not unwinnable, right? I mean, that would be a real contest. Hillel also has the whole residency issue, which, I'd like to do more fleshing out on what exactly, that means in terms of residences in Florida and how that works. So it's not exactly a cakewalk, but I do think he has some built-in advantages.
Yeah, the residency stuff keeps coming up, and he's been senator for a while. He just hasn't put that to rest. And that can be like a real hurdle. Sam Gavan, state senator, was on Dale Jackson's show and said this, Tuberville runs and he clears the field, right? But then you have a token opposition of, not Dean Odle, because I know he's declared it for another, but candidates like that. And then is it entirely possible that a judge or something says, no, you're not eligible? You haven't maintained a proper residency. You can't be on the ballot.
Right.
Then you have you have a crisis, don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, depending on the timing, that could end up with a Democrat winning the governor's race, which would be just kind of crazy thinking about how impossible that has been in the modern era. And so, that's why, there's plenty of time before that, but I mean, I want to flesh some of this stuff out. I think voters deserve that. And the Republican Party deserves that, because you're right. Let's just say he goes right along and then, primary's over, candidates are locked in. What options would the party have to replace him on the ticket? So, and I think, he would owe it to the party and to the state to figure all that out before actually jumping in the race.
Well, and we went through a little of this during the Roy Moore saga, right? And it didn't happen, but there was talk about taking him off the ballot. And I mean, it was all academic anyway. Doug Jones won that contest, but it's not as easy to just to do that as people might think it is. I mean, there are statutory, obligations you have to fulfill. And if it gets too late into it, that becomes very difficult, I would think.
Right. That's exactly right. And let's just say that things do get flushed out and there's a problem. Well, the legislature's in session. They can always change the law to figure out whatever kind of residency things going on. I guess if that were to happen, then Tuberville was in it to win it. And who knows? I think Ainsworth might have an opinion or two about changing the law for residency requirements.
Yeah, well, that one is like, whatever I'm in the state house, that's all anybody wants to talk about, really, what's going to happen there. And I don't know, I won't beat this too much, but what do you think it even looks like? I kind of have an idea of what a Will Ainsworth as governor would look like. Tommy Tuberville, I mean, it could be anything.
Yeah, I mean, look, I worked 4 years in the governor's office. It was some of the best time, best job I've ever had, maybe. It's a real special place. Done right, you can use the governor's office to do a lot of good. And heck, we were working with a Democratic legislature, and it was still a lot of fun. So I love that position. I really respect it, and I admire people that want to step up and do it. But you're right, it's not like Tuberville has a ton of experience in state government. I mean, aside from kind of, being the coach and involved that way. So it would be a lot of learning experience. But that's exactly what he did in the U.S. Senate. And look, I do think there is virtue in outsiders running and being the disruptor and all that kind of stuff. At the same time, I think it would be really important if he were to be governor, to surround himself with people who understand state government, how it works, because you don't want to just burn the place down. There have been a lot of people over the years that put a lot of good effort into, building what we have. There's certainly things that could be changed and all that, but he would need a team around him and certainly a cabinet that was very, very experienced, and so that they don't get railroaded, you know, by the legislature. You saw that a little bit with Bentley. Bentley was an outsider that came in, and he had so little experience and didn't always have a great team, and so the legislature just ran over it. And you would have hoped Tocqueville did differently and surrounded himself with strong people.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We eat governors alive in this state, and you could go, I mean, you go all the way back to Big Jim Folsom probably, but in our recent history, I mean, you know, the Guy Hunt, Don Singleman, and Robert Bentley, to name few. But anyway, put that aside, we're really waiting for that picture to clear before we really know what happens down ballot.
Sure, right, because, you know, okay, right now we've got a long list of candidates for lieutenant governor, and that could even grow, depending on what happens. And that list for lieutenant governor might shrink, too. People think, oh, well, why not just run for secretary of state? Everybody wants to position themselves. A lot of politicians in the state want to position themselves to be the next governor or to be next in line whenever the governor becomes open. That's the end goal, right? Nobody just wakes up and says, you know, I really want to be president of the Senate. I really want to right. preside over the Senate. It's about getting the governor's office. So it's that time again. Everybody's kind of lining up, positioning themselves. So it's a lot of fun. Of course, every legislative seat is on the ballot too. So the entire legislature is going to, you know, either run for reelection. There might be some retirements, people getting challenged. So, I mean, 2026 for us is really a more exciting than a presidential year because the whole state is on the ballot. And so a lot is going to happen in the next, you know, 3 or 4 months as candidates are positioning themselves.
Todd, folks will check out your show tonight with the governor and the attorney general. They will sign up for your newsletter, Alabama Daily News. Tell them what they need to know.
That's right. Tonight, Capital Journal, 7:30 on Alabama Public Television. And yes, you can always sign up for the newsletter. It's easy. It's free. Just go to aldailynews.com, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list.
Todd, we always appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Jeff. Be good.
All right. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright.
Living on the road, my friend.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show and Up and Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Friday morning, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Unnamed texter, I hope you're not referring to that bow tie wearing communist Wayne Reynolds as a conservative on the Board of Education. Maybe conservative is not the proper word, but he is he's an impediment to the status quo. He's not going to go along with the education bureaucracy, which is probably closer to communism than Wayne Reynolds there, unnamed texter. At least that's my sort of shallow analysis of the Alabama School Board, which I can't figure out what they do because so much education policy is done by the Alabama legislature and not the school board. There's a micromanagement of that out of the legislature, which they had the statutory authority to do that. But it's almost like, what's the point of the school board? A name texter says, hi, Jeff. # Black Mansions Matter. That's clever. We can't say all mansions matter, though, do we? Name texter, to be selfish at 45 years old, I wouldn't mind a recession. I enjoy the stock market crashing by cheap. I don't think you necessarily need a recession to get stocks low. Now, because a recession I know they're kind of interconnected, but I mean, there's a bunch of different things that impact the stock market beyond just the general health of the economy. You do have these oftentimes dissonance between the two, just based on global, what's going around in the globe, etc. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
It's good to see you. I must go. I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes are mine.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Friday. It's finally Friday. 251-343-0106 is the text line. We got a ton of text to get to. Thank you for participating in the civic process of this program. Gives me a lot to talk about. Still to come on the program in about 30 minutes, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. One of the must-listen-to segments of the week for many of our state's movers and shakers for some reason. They love to listen to Chris Elliott and talk about his view about the Alabama legislature. Even our friend in Hale County, the Senate Minority Leader, Bobby Singleton, who has taken a fancy to listening to this show and to hear me gripe about how he is abusing the rules of the Alabama State Senate to filibuster everything. Because, you know, in Alabama, you guys, you do your good little deed and you go vote and you give us, you give the grand old party super majorities only to be told, well, guess what? Too bad. Because two Democrats are going to tell you when and what gets voted on the Senate floor in the state of Alabama. A democracy in action, as they say. But we're glad to have Bobby Singleton out there monitoring. It's probably not him, to be honest. But some of the apple polishing tattletales out there telling him that he is getting some airtime on this broadcast. But anyway, we will have him on. And then my friend from Tide 109 in Tuscaloosa, Hunter Johnson, and we'll talk some hoops. Because it just seems appropriate. At 11:30, we're going to break away for Auburn Tiger basketball. They got the Ole Miss Rebels coming up. And it's the SEC tournament. It's March Madness. And that's what I plan on doing around lunchtime today, while I juggle my other duties. So you'll want to make sure that you stay tuned for that. We're going to go through some text here. Ricky, why does America give Israel $5 billion every year? Since 1948, plus they get free health care and a free education off the tax dollars. Well, and then I don't know what the actual dollar amount. I'm sure if you look at the value of what the U.S. Gives to Israel, it probably comes up to something like that. Now, I don't know about their social spending, and who knows what Elon Musk will uncover, Ricky, but I think people in this country, especially Christian evangelicals who take the Old Testament very seriously, Ricky, as I'm sure you do, understand the importance of the chosen people in Israel and God's chosen people, and understand that's just what's important in a government for, of, and by the people. Now, there's all kinds of anti-Zionist, this isn't really in America's interest, but I think you can make a case for Israel being in America's interest, probably more than you can a lot of the other countries that we give way, especially Ukraine, way more than $5 billion to. It's an ally in a region that is vital to the U.S. economy. If you like driving your Vespa scooter around, Ricky, I mean, what are you putting in that thing? I mean, or is it electric? I don't know. What. Maybe you got an electric, that's your mode of transit, Ricky. But the price of oil is traded on a global market, and it's important for the U.S. to have a presence in the Middle East. Now, they have other countries that we're allied with, but we're very much aligned with Israel. We're not 100% aligned, but you know, it's good to have a friend in the region. At least you can make that case. I don't think you can make that case necessarily about Ukraine or any other, especially in the Far East. But we got to keep those shipping channels going, and there's a number of reasons to justify the U.S. aiding Israel. Terry, hopefully the next governor won't be a tinfoil pot dictator and will stop the petty bureaucrats or extorting state lawmakers. Well, that's what I kind of hope. And I know, like, look, let's talk about the whole, what's going on in the federal government as a backdrop. The appetite in this country and probably the state is for something like what Donald Trump and his administration are doing to happen here in Alabama. That's where the political winds have shifted, or whether they like it or not. And you have a governor who's not really feeling it, maybe not even aware of it. Now, she did pay lip service to Donald Trump dismantling the Department of Education. I mean, at least she's at least rhetorically on the right side. And I would watch real close. I would watch very close this interview tonight she's going to do with Todd Stacey. She never says much. But we don't get much Governor Ivey. We don't get her vision one time a year on Capital Journal and the State of the State. And she doesn't do press gaggles anymore. She's not available to the public. She'll give her people, the little apparatchiks that work for her, will put out some kind of boilerplate statement on everything. But we don't know what she's thinking at any given moment. Not that we have to know play by play, but man, it should be nice to get more out of her than twice a year. There's no transparency in state government. The bureaucracy runs the show. And I always tell people this, and think about if Alabama had a deep state, I mean, maybe to some degree it's Aaliyah. But it's not like law enforcement at the federal level. It's the Alabama Department of Transportation. It's the Department of Corrections. It's the education bureaucracy, very powerful, with a very powerful teachers union. I mean, you gotta start thinking about state government, but it's not a reflection of federal government at all in Alabama. The people with power have power in much different ways. And what you'd like to see, because you see Aldott like playing heavy in advertising and trying to shape public opinion on things. What is the Department of Transportation at the federal level function as our state Department of Transportation? And the DOT, now, I don't know how much it's going on now, especially with John Cooper. But, I mean, at one time, they pulled road projects in members' districts who didn't support the priorities of the governor. Ask Bill Holtzclaw, former state senator from Madison County. Mid-project, they walked off the job because he put up a billboard opposing a tax increase in his district. Which, I understand, you go against the governor, you do run that risk, but if the project's already started and the state has identified the need to improve a roadway, then that's where the sort of focus ought to be. And not, well, you're not supporting, at least not rhetorically, my tax increase plan, so we're gonna punish you. But it's been done like this before in the past. Just needs to be noted that happens. And some of that needs to be cleaned up. Jeff, Ricky is an anti-Israel butt clown. And they text you, Genesis 12:3, I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and the people of this earth will be blessed through you. Fire dog, it's not electric, it's a coal-powered car. I have that argument with Tesla owners here all the time. Where do you think that wall outlet gets the power from? Unicorn farts? So, well, no, fire dog, the point was, We produce a lot of oil domestically too, but we produce our electricity. I don't think we import much electricity. I know Canada, I guess, because they were threatening us. But we're not importing electricity from the Middle East. But we do import oil. It's traded as a global commodity. And if the supply and demand fluctuate on a global basis, I mean, we will fill it at the gas pump here domestically. And that's sort of my point. What Ricky drives and it being electric or oil or whatever, unicorn farts, as you put it, is tangential to the discussion. They text her, get back to protected serve instead of this torment and harass. Exactly why Coach would be a great governor. I assume is what you mean. Not another go along to get along with the same old crap. And he said, nailed it. Well, thank you for the vote of confidence. Text her, is that what happened with the highway 158 extension to the Mississippi state line? The 158 extension, if I'm not mistaken, was BP oil settlement money. Very separate from like what the state in 181 in Baldwin County. They were projects that came to be under a different set of circumstances. So I don't know if you can apply the Jeff Poor deep state theorem. Speaking of Jeff Poor theorems, I'm going to get to that in just a moment to get through this one text. Israel has a $3 billion surplus in their country, and America is a $37 trillion debt to the feds, which Israel owns. Ricky. You borderline anti-Semitism here, but just for the sake of giving you the benefit of the doubt. I mean, you gotta put your ethnic biases aside. You're letting all the secrets out at one time. LOL. Well, I don't think they're secrets. They're the worst kept secrets in this state, unnamed texter. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Johnny's will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. And then Texter writes, at least Alabama isn't as corrupt as Louisiana. What could be one of the richest, which could be one of the richest states in the Union is dismal. Well, there's between Alabama and Louisiana, let me say this, is there's a sizable Democratic Party presence in, I mean, which is New Orleans, in Louisiana. And we don't, I mean, we got Birmingham here, but they still elect Democrats statewide in Louisiana. So the Republicans they elect statewide aren't exactly, you know, it's not exactly Ron DeSantis. John Kennedy is Bill Cassidy or not, you know, Kennedy can be funny at times, but he's more on the moderate side of the Republican caucus in the Senate. We don't have that excuse here. We ought to have a state that's just like a reflection of our state government ought to be a reflection of the politics of the state. It's just not. It's not. People think it is, I guess, and they assume it is. They operate on an assumption. It doesn't really maybe impact their life directly. But it's Trip Pittman said earlier, or maybe no, it was Dick Brubaker. It's more corporatist. You know, all this talk about jobs and workforce development, that's all like to the benefit. Yeah, there are benefits to the public at large, but it's benefiting big business. It's benefiting the power company, creating more customers, right? It's that kind of mentality. And those are the people who have the outsized influence in Montgomery. Terry, DOT saying, vote for this or you don't get your highway, sounded like bribery to me. I bet that's exactly why it goes on. If you voted against Rebuild Alabama, it's not like they score road projects. I mean, they do score road projects based on merit, but if you live in a district where you go against what the governor's priorities are, the merit of your road project is moved down the list. Heavy traffic congestion is not necessarily the main driver of whatever highway projects the state pursues. I mean, look at this veterans bill and who led the charge on the Senate. And then you look and you see a four-lane highway from Gadsden, Alabama to Cherokee County, Alabama. And it doesn't take much to figure that out. Ask Elliot about all these companies, Baldwin County and the cities who have benefited from land developers using illegal immigrants for labor. Why not start charging these companies to send them back to their home country? Baldwin County cities have been approving nonstop development or using illegal labor, and these developments are agreeing to do it, the infrastructure work, such as roundabouts, new roads. Well, the function of deportation is on the federal government. Now, they're looking at doing some of this. Was it April Weaver? She's a senator from the Birmingham area who wants to put a surcharge on wire transfers. And you get it back if you file income taxes. You can file it as a deduction. But if you're here legally, you're obviously not filing income taxes statewide. And you see they're trying some of this at the state level on Dave Texter. And then I I got a bunch of screenshots of Bible verses. Anyway, the Jeff Porth theory real quick is this. Like, I'll save this for, I got Elliot next. I'll save this for after Elliot. About what happened, what could happen in our politics if the status quo is allowed to continue in Montgomery, Alabama. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Porth Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Friday. Friday, it's finally Friday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. All you do is text me and I'll respond. I try not to belabor the responses, but sometimes I get a little long-winded and it's just my inexperience as a radio host. Still to come on the program, my friend Hunter Johnson from Tide 100.9 in Tuscaloosa, and we'll talk hoops as we head into the SEC tournament to be played this weekend. Speaking of the SEC tournament, he is very kind to move up a little bit. We'll be preempted about an hour from now for Auburn basketball, but our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott, joins us on the line. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing fine. Got to get the priorities straight, and I think y'all got yours straight.
Yeah, this politics stuff, it needs to be secondary sometimes. But, how's your week off been?
Busy, as you might imagine. I mean, it's one of those things. It's you're away from your business and you're away from your family and you're away from your constituents. They are all anxious to see you and talk to you and add their two cents about what's going on in person. And so it has certainly been a busy week.
Yeah, and the chattering class doesn't rest on these off weeks. I'll say that. Let's kick it off with this, and this is a story from Landiap yesterday. You mentioned it, then your House counterpart down that way, Francis Holt Jones, the bill to give the two systems down at the beaches, Orange Beach and Gulf Shores, their share of tax revenue. Walk us through that. What do you think that's, is that like something that could really happen?
It needs to happen. I mean, this was a bill that was originally, a piece of legislation that was originally passed in the early 80s that levied a 1 cent sales tax countywide, a portion of which, the portion we're talking of which, goes to public education. And, what we've done in Baldwin County is add two different school systems in Baldwin County. The legislation from the early 80s contemplated only one school system, the Baldwin County Board of Education, because back in 83, that's all there was. And we simply need to update that to really reflect that there's now more than one school system in Baldwin County, and not just the Baldwin County Board of Education. And so I think that's a very simple change to make, and one that is unquestionably the right thing to do. I mean, can you imagine the counter to that, which was you levy a tax countywide and you only give it to Orange Beach, or you only give it to Gulf Shores, and you don't give any to the rest of the schools in Baldwin County? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And so we need to do just like what we do so often in Montgomery, which is just update the statute to reflect what currently exists.
Is the Baldwin County public school system, they're not the superintendent quoted in the story, they're not very keen on this, as one might expect. But I mean, do you expect that to be a problem?
Well, of course, and I'm very disappointed, I think is a nice way to say that, in the stance they've taken. I mean, it is fundamentally unfair to take tax money for education for the children out of these districts and not allow them to use it for educating children just because you're mad that they left your system. I mean, that's just it's small ball. And unfortunately, I think it's going to have big impacts for the school system as a whole. I mean, you're aware, I'm sure, as are others, that there are at least three other cities in Baldwin County that are seeing what's happening in Gulf Shores, seeing what's happening in Orange Beach, as it relates to investment in education, athletic facilities, in new schools, and certainly in, you know, in performance, right, results. And they're interested in their own school system, their city school system. And so I think you'll see that those conversations are already happening in certainly in Fairhope and in Daphne and in Foley to see if they will do that. So at some point, whether I have the votes now or not, the votes will be there because those representatives will end up doing what I do, which is representing some city schools and some county schools, both of which we want to treat fairly. And the kids we want to treat fairly and make sure that they have their share of the tax revenue. It's just absurd to have one system think they should get it all.
Well, it's you know, the discussion, I guess, you just mentioned it, but sort of the, you know, the Baldwin County school system splintering up. And it's remarkable that it's lasted as it is, as long as it has, just with the growth of the county, that you haven't seen more municipalities strike out and form their own school systems. And I kind of wonder, like, do you think that's something, like, how far away do you think we are from something like that?
I don't think we're far away from that at all. And listen, the Baldwin County Public School System has done a great job in Baldwin County, educating kids and really being a pretty good example of what a county school system can do. I mean, if you go back and rewind here about 10 years or so, they were in big trouble. They were in big trouble with the voters. They were in big trouble with revenue sources, et cetera. And they, in partnership with the county commission, which I served on at the time, really laid out a plan for the future, how they were going to innovate, how they were going to be fiscally responsible, and how they were going to continue to address the needs of a growing Baldwin County. And they've done that well. There have been cities, though, that have, as is their right, decided, no, we want to do this differently. We want to chart our own course, whether that's academically or because they want to put more money in their particular system. And so the county, I think, really laid this plan out, the county school system itself, when it came up with these tax overlay districts, right? And you saw referendums in each one of these areas that said, we want a 3-mill tax overlay district in Spanish Fork, in Fairhope, in Daphne, in Robertsdale. We want to do that so that our schools have more resources. And what they found was people seem to be much more willing to invest their resources in their particular school system and not some big countywide school system. They want to know it's going to their school. And so that's what you've seen in the city schools, is people being much more willing to invest in their school system as opposed to a larger bureaucracy of a countywide school system. And so, yes, I think you'll see continued efforts at city schools around the county.
Yeah, because you know, they've held that at bay, like I said, a lot longer than I would have anticipated. And with the feeder systems and the taxation there, how long till somebody says, hey, well, what are we doing here? You know, like, why aren't we just going at it on our own as the beaches have? It's kind of fascinating that we haven't gotten to that point.
Well, I think you're going to get to that point, and it is important to note that's not something that the legislature has any involvement in, right? That is something that is a decision that's made at the city level, either by the city council in concert with the mayor or through a referendum, however they decide to handle that. I just think it's important that whatever the future is, we don't have countywide tax revenue going to just a few schools, and instead it needs to be split up to the children in Baldwin County, as was originally intended.
Well, it's, you know, we talk about wealth redistribution. I got to think those beach municipalities, they raise a lot of sales tax and they're having to send it out of their system. I mean, that is, it's not just unfair. I mean, it's robbery.
Well, and that's what bothered me about Superintendent Tyler's comment in particular, was that we were taking from the needy children, or the children that need it most. And this is not needs based. I mean, it is not a Robin Hood approach, guys. I don't know how he can justify that and say, well, we need it more, therefore we will take it from you. that's ideologically opposed to where I am. I think if you're levying that in your municipality, it's levied in your municipality for the purposes of education, then you ought to be able to keep it for the purposes of educating our kids and not simply because somebody else needs it more. Otherwise, we'd be sending it to Sumter County by that logic.
Yeah, it's just a very hollow argument, and it's not an argument, Senator, that that doesn't sound very Baldwin County in the tradition of the politics here that you could really get away with. It just seems insane to me. But anyway,
that might be why you're seeing some of these city schools wanting to split off.
Yeah, well, I mean, like how you don't think we're that far away, but is there a way to quantify that?
Yeah, I think you'll see activity on this within a year in Fairhope. And I think that you probably will be talking about that in less time than that. Let's see, maybe 2 years or so in Daphne. And then you have to really look at this from a, countywide scale. Okay, well, then where do the kids in Barnwell go to school? Okay, if they're outside the city, where do the kids in Point Clear go to school? If they're outside of the city. And so what cities are seeing this as is an opportunity for annexation, right? Then they have a thing that people want, and then they're more interested in annexing in. And so it's a 3D chess type of situation. But at the end of the day, the argument I'm making is simple, and that is the taxes raised for the kids. That means all the kids in Baldwin County, not just some, regardless of how Superintendent Tyler, feels they need it.
What about some of these schools that are like charter schools and that are, I mean, obviously would remain under county control, but they've been like geographically placed in places that would probably, they would have to move them, one would think.
Well, most of the charter school funding operates, exclusively of local funding. And so this local funding could and would, if we change this, talk about, public school systems in a municipality, et cetera. And so we don't have any charter schools in Baldwin County in particular, and this is a local piece of legislation. So I think we'll skirt that particular issue.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Well, I can imagine this will be a fight with this taking these sales taxes, but it's, they don't really have a cogent argument. So I don't know. I'm eager to hear from the other side on this one. Back to matters statewide. You get back next week. We talked to Todd Stacey a little bit about this earlier. Ought to be a relatively subdued week next week for you guys, and then you get another week off, and then I think that's when you really start cracking your knuckles, and that's when you're going to start to see the gray hair start to show, the bags under the eyes. Like, that's, you start to see a little bit of that last week, but three weeks from now, it'll get a little more contentious, I assume.
Well, I think you're right. And there is some merit in, making sure that the machinery of the legislature, it works and is oiled and the gears are churning out the things that we need to churn out, right? The sunset bills, that need to pass in order for, these entities to continue to exist, right? If you simply don't take up the sunset bill, then the entity stops existing altogether. Now, some of them I might be okay with that on, but it's a great way to shrink government. But all in all, you need to deal with those bills one way or the other. And then, of course, we have confirmations. The governor's put forward confirmations for all of these different entities to serve on boards, whether it's the board of trustees at the, at a university down to the, massage therapy board and everybody in between. And so we need to work through those and get some of those out of the way. We're going to get started on the budgets here. I know the budget chairman have been working on that over the break. And so we'll be working on that. And then I think you are, you're correct. Once we move through all of those things this week in the interim, then it's going to be time to get back to tackling tough issues that we have not gotten to yet. And so whether that's dealing with PBM, whether that's dealing with the conversation between Alpha and Blue Cross. And then, of course, Senator Gudger, I think, has wisely, charted a path, here to how to deal with things and when to deal with things. I think there's an opportunity to deal with some things that maybe our colleagues, on the other side of the aisle previously have expressed displeasure with.
Oh, well, in case anybody out there is listening in the Montgomery intelligentsia that likes to go tattletale, we won't get into that too much. But the PBM issue, it looks like that's got real wind in its sails. And I know that there's like some very powerful lobbies that are pushing back. But if you look around the chambers, I don't know that that's really working for them.
No, I mean, look, at the end of the day, we are certainly elected to deal with the issues that are important to our constituents, right? And sometimes they're broad and sometimes they're narrow. And this is a fairly narrow one. It's impactful across a broad group of people, but it's fairly narrow. And so I think what, again, many that have been negotiating this, I think, you know, the President Pro Tem is handling this well, is trying to find a sweet spot where we can provide some relief for these pharmacists who are currently having to pay more to purchase the prescription themselves than they are able to sell it for or being reimbursed for. It's just an untenable business situation. And so what they're trying to do is figure out a way to fix that situation, but without completely upending, health insurance costs and prescription drug costs. And so I think it's a very scalpel approach. Obviously, the big PBM folks and the bigger entities in the state would like for things to stay just as they are. And it's much harder to get something done in Montgomery than it is to stop something from getting done. And they may ultimately be successful. But I think the path that our leadership in the Senate is charting for us is to try to find something that will find that sweet spot, address the pharmacists, the independent pharmacists' concerns, those community pharmacists' concerns, and then but not in a way that causes everybody's health insurance to increase.
Last one. Speaking of health insurance, the Alpha Blue Cross Blue Shield saga. They've been running ads. The opponents of the Alpha Health Plan on the station. I don't know. It's hard for me to like find fault other than that. I guess he's out the insurance plan or whatever you call them, health plans get to operate on a different set of rules than everybody else.
That's correct. And that's the big rub, right? I mean, I'm a free market guy and I think you ought to be able to sell what somebody will buy, and if it's health insurance, that's fine. Is it important to realize that what is being discussed that being sold by Alpha is different from what's being sold by Blue Cross Blue Shield? Yes, it's different. Do I think that some of my constituents, if we approve this, are going to have a rude awakening one day when they find out they do not have the type of coverage that they thought they had when they purchased a cheaper product? Yes. But at the end of the day, I think it is right to allow to get government out of the way so that you can make informed decisions on your own. And if they are poor decisions, then they are your poor decisions.
Right.
So, I'm sorry, but at the end of the day, that's the market.
Well, you're not going to. Not, I mean, we're running long here, but I want to get this in. There is a real deficiency there. We want to keep a vibrant ag community in Alabama, but if Jeff Poor or Chris Elliott go out and stake out to be farmers, what do we do for health insurance coverage? It's cost prohibitive. There's got to be an option on the table, and I don't know what that is.
Well, look, I've done it before. I buy a cheaper used truck that's not as safe and doesn't get as good a mileage. And I do that because that's what I can afford. And I look at this the same way.
Senator, we always appreciate having you on. We'll catch up again next week. Thanks for hopping on.
Thanks, Jeff. Y'all have a great weekend.
State Senator Chris Elliott there. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
The first thing I remember knowing.
They get on me and want to know, Hank, why do you drink? Hank, why do you roll smoke? Why must you live out the song that you wrote? Over and over, everybody made my prediction.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Real quick before we get to break here. Now, we talk a lot about sort of this intransigence in the Alabama State Senate. You have a couple of Democrat members, and you've heard me talk about over and over again, and they've even referenced, one of them has, this program and my gripes. And the Republicans' leadership allows what goes on to go on. But what I just say this to Republican leadership out there, if you're listening. You let this continue. You let this sort of thing continue where Democrats just steamroll a Republican supermajority. You're going to wind up with some members in the Republican caucus, inevitably, who are not going to play ball like this. They pretty much weeded out a row of state senators who really stuck together in past quadrenniums to slow everything down on the Republican side. Phil Williams, our friend Trip Pittman, Brubaker to some degree, Bussman. You're going to get guys like that back in the state Senate, and you're going to have that headache. And if you allow this to continue, I'm telling you, don't have to listen to me. That's what's going to happen. You got to show some leadership here, guys. I'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I'm eastbound, just watch no bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some never mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday, this abbreviated hour of the Jeff Poor Show coming up here in about 30 minutes. We'll have Auburn Tiger basketball, so I'll be breaking away. Real quick, I didn't get to do this in the last segment because I was trying to explain something, but coming up on Monday, State Representative Jennifer Fidler will be with us, Dell Jackson from WVNN up in Huntsville and Yellowhammer News, and a guest to be determined later, as I will probably try to do that later this afternoon. Join us now. I like to have him on from time to time. He takes time from trolling us Auburn fans on social media to be on this radio program, and we're very appreciative of that. But from Tide 100.9, he does the Tide pregame hoop show. You can hear him up there. If you're up there, headed up to a game, you need to tune in. Sometimes it floats around on different signals up there. But Hunter Johnson, who does a really good job with that, joins us now. Hunter, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well. The trolling's been good the last couple days. It's been a good time, and I appreciate your plug on my show. Appreciate you and your son coming by when y'all played basketball up here. I appreciate y'all coming by and checking it out, even though I was on the air the entire time and didn't get to say hello, but I appreciate y'all coming by.
No, it's a cool place just to walk around where you do your remote sometimes. Man, that part of Tuscaloosa has just really changed in my lifetime, and it's
definitely it's a cool spot. It used to be a little bit more, I'll say, dangerous, but it's more well lit now. Props to Walt Nye. I'm making that area sound safer. You got a Jack Brown's right there. You got Alabama Peanut Company. I do my show at Grandstand. There's a cool cocktail bar nearby. It's a cool spot.
The peanut place is fascinating to me. It's like you get these different, they like flavor the peanuts like chicken wings, and you go in there and you eat peanuts and drink beer kind of place.
Yeah. I mean, it's a guaranteed moneymaker. You got peanuts, and what do you want to wash down peanuts with? Beer. It's like, go through. My favorite that they have is they have the Mississippi Rose peanut flavor, which is incredible.
Yeah, well, we walked around, but it's hard to get a 4-year-old to want to imbibe. He had other ideas, so
sure. Well, he got to see a fun basketball game for his Tigers that day.
He did, and he's obnoxious. Like he was wanting to see Alabama fans cry, and after the game, he's running down that cool concourse that y'all built right there in front of the Coliseum, yelling, "It's great to be an Auburn Tiger." I don't know where he picked that up from, but
I'm glad I didn't. Well, one, if he had seen me after that game, he probably would have really, really enjoyed it. So I'm glad he didn't get to see me that day.
Well, it was funny. He's like, "Daddy, where are the crying Alabama fans?" And I was like, that's not really a thing, son, but it didn't dampen any of the spirits. But you got us back last week. I think Alabama went through its trying time where you do have that sort of fatigue. It's like this every year, Hunter, or at least from watching Auburn. They kind of hit a rut, right? And you can just see the tired. And then they kind of snap out of it. But sometimes, I think like last year, it just came at the wrong time during the tournament. But, you know, the final 4 years for both of us, you got past that and then you got hot. What do you think? I mean, what do you anticipate these next few days with the SEC tournament?
Well, for Alabama, I will say this. At the beginning of the year, I thought we would split with Auburn. I did not think it would go in the fashion that it did. I thought we would get Auburn at home and then we'd lose down there. And coming off of two consecutive losses to Tennessee in the heartbreaking fashion that it was, and then kind of getting dominated by Florida, I didn't have real high expectations going into that Auburn game just because I thought this team had lost its legs a little bit. I thought that we needed this week of the SEC tournament to kind of get our legs back. So I was kind of surprised to see Alabama really snap out of it down there. And I felt like you saw a team that really, like, I don't know that had their legs back, but just really had a lot of motivation going down to Auburn to play the number one team in the country, not really having anything to play for other than pride and seeding. But I do think that having this week off is going to be really, really good for us. The SEC tournament, Bruce Pearl said it earlier this week, that the SEC tournament might be tougher to win than the NCAA tournament. Because all these games that you're playing, you're going up against Sweet 16, Elite 8 type teams. And with Auburn, I think that Auburn's kind of hit their rut, and I could totally see them bouncing out of it and going on a run now.
Well, this team that scares me the most is Florida right now. They got past their rut, like, early. They got blown out a couple of times, and they beat us at home. But when that's when they sort of turned a corner and they became sort of a dominant team. I think they'll go real far this year.
They're my pick to win the SEC tournament. I think that they're just playing – when they're playing their best, I don't know that there's many teams in the country that can beat them. I don't know that they're going to bring their best for six consecutive games in the NCAA tournament, but I could definitely see them doing it for three or four and making a run to the Elite Eight, Final Four. I think that they're just really, really good. With them getting handlocked back, like, I think that takes them to a whole other level.
And then there's Tennessee, and the difference with Tennessee, you don't know what you're going to get, what Tennessee right. team is going to show. They're very good. Don't get me wrong. And you know, should we win today, that's who we probably faced on Saturday. But you never know. It's such a wild card.
And they just play such good defense. Like, you know that you're always going to get that hard-nosed defensive play from them. It's just a matter of if they're going to score or not. And against Alabama, and I thought Alabama actually played really well going up there, like, other than the last 30 seconds of the game, which I think Nate will admit he blundered those. But Alabama played really well up there. But Tennessee had a pretty good offensive game there. But you also have times where they don't score the basketball enough to be in games. But they are very, very good. I think that Auburn-Tennessee matchup in Auburn was a really, really good one earlier this year. I would love to see those two teams play again.
Well, look outside the SEC real quick. And you know, it's obviously Duke, but I think their luck may be running out here. Houston, maybe. Beyond the SEC, Hunter, it's hard for me to know, like, who the cream of the crop is. They just haven't played as difficult a schedule, so you don't really get a good apples-to-apples comparison. Well, who do you see coming out beyond the SEC?
Well, when you talk about, dude, the whole Cooper Flag injury thing, like, right. that, I mean, that's just a huge unknown, like, how severe. That ankle did not look good when it happened. I realized the x-rays were negative, but I mean, a bad ankle sprain, I don't know if you've ever sprained your ankle pretty bad. It's tough to come back from. So I don't see him being even at full speed next week. I think Houston's really, really good. And that's a team that both Alabama and Auburn have beaten this year. You know, half of their losses came to the state of Alabama. I still think they are a really, really good basketball team. They've always been really good defensively. But this year, offensively, they are much, much better than they have ever been. They're top 10 in offensive efficiency. They are definitely a team that I mean, it's all just going to depend on the bracket and you know, what team catches some breaks. Obviously, Alabama caught a couple of breaks last year in getting the worst number one seed in North Carolina and getting to play Clemson in the Elite Eight. But it's going to depend on how the bracket breaks. But I think Houston would be my, if I had to pick a non-SEC team to make the Final Four, it would definitely be Houston. And I also like Iowa State. I think Iowa State, even though they've already, I believe, lost in the Big 12 tournament, I can definitely see Iowa State making a run as well. They lost to BYU yesterday in a close game. I could see Iowa State making a run.
Because on paper, Iowa State, like, really good team. They've underperformed throughout the season, but like these tournament, it's totally different, and you get focused, you get locked in, and a team like Iowa State, like you said on paper, supposed to be really, really, really good, hasn't really performed, but you put them in a sort of a vacuum in a tournament situation, which not necessarily true in a conference tournament, they can make a run. Who else you got?
You talked about that, and I would say Alabama was like that last year. You had nobody picking Alabama to make a Final Four run last year. The way that right. Alabama closed out the season, losing in the first their first game in the SEC tournament, nobody was picking Alabama to go on a run. Well, sometimes teams just flip a switch, and with Alabama last year, it was defensively. Alabama just decided after the SEC tournament that they were going to play good defense. I wish they had decided that earlier in the season, could have won an SEC title, but they decided they were going to play defense and they did it. And you never know who that team is going to be. I think there's again, Houston is the one that I really think. And, all right, here's my kind of dark horse pick. And even though they're probably going to be an 8 or a 9 seed, or probably an 8, Gonzaga's probably going to be an 8 seed, and I really hope that, if Auburn gets them as their 8 seed when they're the 1 seed, that's going to be a tough matchup. I mean, they're number 9 in Bar Torbit, which is one of the metrics that I use. Like, means that they think that they're one of the 9, like the 9th best team in the country. I could see Gonzaga as kind of a dark horse to go in a run.
Let's talk about the SEC tournament in the bracket here. Who needs to, of the teams remaining, who needs to add to, I guess, obviously Texas, because they're, but what do you think? Kentucky seems like another one of those teams that could make a run. You don't know. They're hard to read. I don't think they were up for that game against us a few weeks ago at Rupp. But beyond Texas, teams that are left to position themselves for the tournament, it looks like Missouri, I guess, too. What do you think there?
Well, I think Alabama has something to play for in that it's going to come down to Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida for those remaining one seeds. And I think two of those three will get it. I think it would take Alabama making a run to the finals in order to get that. As an Alabama fan, I'm kind of hoping that we end up as the 2 in Houston's bracket, just because that would mean we would play in Indianapolis and not be the 1 seed out west in San Francisco. It would just be a little bit easier of a trip. But I could see Missouri. I think that Missouri-Florida game is going to be great. Really, really good basketball game. Missouri got them in Gainesville earlier this year. I think that's going to be I think there's 3 games today that are going to be fantastic games. I don't know that the Texas-Tennessee game is going to be great. I think Texas, after playing on Wednesday and then a double overtime game yesterday against their rival, I just think they're probably going to be spent. I still think they should get in the NCAA tournament, though. But, yeah, I mean, Kentucky, I think, has a lot to play for tonight. Obviously, that game last night was a grind for them. It'll be interesting to see how they come out and play tonight. But I think what's great about what we have right now in these final 8 teams is everybody's pretty much in the NCAA tournament. Texas on that bubble, I still think they get in. I just think you have 8 really, really good basketball teams left, and it's going to be good basketball today.
So you think Auburn's the number 1 seed regardless, but to be the number 1 overall, they at least got to win today.
I don't think they did. I think that even if they were to lose today, and also an interesting stat that I don't mean this as a troll, but in both of the years that Bruce has won the SEC title, the regular season at Auburn, Auburn's lost in their first SEC tournament game. In 2018, it was to Alabama. 2022, it was to Texas A&M. So I do, and I think Ole Miss is really, really good, and Auburn could lose that basketball game. But it would be to see Auburn win that game, I think that you're definitely assured of the number one seed. But I think there's a number one overall seed, even if they don't get the W today.
Really? I don't know. You may be right. I guess it's just the.
So who are you going to give it to? You're going to give it to Duke with an injured Cooper Flagg? I think the injury to Cooper Flagg even makes that even more so.
No, I think it depends on how they do in the ACC tournament. You know, you're right. If Duke bails out, you know, between now and Sunday, then I think you could see Auburn remain the number one seed. But there's a chance for Duke if Auburn doesn't win today.
Well, no matter what, I think Auburn's still going to be playing in Atlanta because Duke would prefer to play up in the East region. So I think Auburn's going to be in Atlanta no matter what.
Well, yeah, and Auburn fans this year showing they will travel, and that'll be almost like a home game situation. Hey, Hunter, we're up against the break. We got to get out of here. Folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
You can follow me at Burner L. Johnson, and you can listen to the Tide Hoop pregame show on, it's normally, depending on if Alabama baseball is playing or not, we're normally on Tide 100.9, but if baseball is playing, then we transfer over to the flagship of our Town Square media stations, and that is 95.3 The Bear.
Y'all check that out. All right, we got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Have a riddle by morning. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on what's left of this Friday broadcast. Coming up Monday on the show, State Representative Jennifer Fidler will be with us. Also from WVNN and Yellowhammer News is Del Jackson. We'll talk to him about whatever happens over the weekend. No midday mobile today. Like I said, Auburn Tiger basketball coming up here. In just a few minutes, pregame ought to be underway momentarily. Let's get through some text here, and we'll run it up to the break. For last name was not Fiddler, she would be supporting this Alpha Insurance. Let them all op. She would not be supporting this Alpha Insurance. Let them all operate the same. But it doesn't address the problem. Like, you want farmers, and they got to have health insurance. What do you do then? It's not about the insurance company. This is like a real problem for people. Because Obamacare made buying health insurance, if it's not employer based, just cost prohibitive. Because people are getting subsidies, and what does that do? It drives up demand, which lowers the supply, and it makes things more expensive. Toothless Bear, these policies offered by Alpha are good coverage. They're catastrophic. May not cover a $40 doctor visit, but will cover major medical. They are sold. Or sold in the past, Blue Cross Blue Shield commercials are not accurate about cancer coverage. I didn't expect that they would be. Terry says, shut it down, shut it down, shut it down. Bust the employer, hire illegal. The job market will dry up for them. Shane Poppy, a.k.a. Poppy here. Just listening and not much talking. I am chasing grandberries. I'm grandbabies. I do enjoy the show. Michael, I'd say Florida and Auburn, it's a big drop-off to Bama, Houston, St. John's, and Iowa State. I don't know. I think Alabama, when Sears is on Grant Nelson in that Auburn game, like, where did he come from? I mean, potential Elite Eight Final Four team again. It just depends on the seeding and how that goes, the matchups. As Hunter was saying, you know, they had kind of an interesting draw last year that lent itself to them going to the Final Four. And then finally, T-Bone, maybe this guy said that Houston had their best offense ever, wasn't born yet when Drexler and Olajuwon there. I don't think he was. That was some time ago, T-Bone. But Houston right now, we played them down there very early in the season, and they were good, and the game went down to the wire, but that was when Auburn was really, really clicking. Then they had the they played Iowa State to the final basket. We're down by a big number. Auburn was. So I don't know. Like, the thing about those games and the games now, like, there is real fatigue. Been to a bunch of games this season. Might try to get up to Atlanta if that's the case for one of the tournament games or two. But it's a different season. It really is. What Auburn has going for it, it's kind of got a deep bench. I don't know that's the case necessarily with Alabama. Florida, they just hit their stride at the right time. And they're kind of a dominant team right now. That's my very sophomoric analysis of sports ball. But I do watch. I do have opinions on these things. We're still watching, I think, here in about an hour or so on the politics front. We'll see if they vote for cloture on the shutdown. Watch this real close, too. Everybody right now in Democrat world and never Trump world, just hardcore about caring about the stock market. If they avert a government shutdown, that market's going to go up. Mark my word today. All right, guys, it's been a pleasure. I will try to do better on Monday. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.